Blog Talk Radio.
Took me a while, but I'm finally here. So I just wanna testify, make it crystal clear. See, I've been picked out to be picked on. Talked about out my friend's mouth. I've been beat down till you turn my life around. Seems like I always fall short of being worthy. I ain't good enough, but he still loves me. I ain't no superstar, the spotlight ain't shining on me. I ain't good enough, but he still loves me.
I used to wake up some days and wish I stayed asleep. Cause I went to bed on top of the world. Today the world's on top of me. Now everybody's got opinions. They ain't been in my position. That'll break my heart when I hear what they have to say about me.
What they say about you?
Hello out there in podcast land. Welcome, 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 and thank you for tuning in. This is Nurse Carmen. We have co-producers Ken and Ron Hodge. And next we'll have a conversation with the messenger, Ron Hodge.
Good evening, and thank you all once again for tuning in to our podcast. I want to say, as I start out each podcast, as things are being said, that just doesn't, you don't understand or you're just not feeling right about, feel free to ask any questions that you might have. But one of the things that I like to ask my listeners to do is to have a talk with yourself, have a talk with God, so that God can provide you with the correct answer, so that you know it's of God and not of me. Today, I want to talk about what to do about the less fortunate. First, you have to decide who and what you are in relationship to them. Second, if you decide you wish to experience yourself as being secure, as being help, as being love and compassion and caring, then look to see how you can best be those things. And notice that your ability to be those things has nothing to do with what others are being or doing. Sometimes the best way to love someone and the most help you can give is to leave them alone or empower them to help themselves. It's like a feast. Life is a smorgasbord, and you can give them a big helping of themselves. Remember that the greatest help you can give a person is to wake them up, to remind them of who they really are. There are many ways to do this. Sometimes with a little bit of a help, a push, a shove, a nudge, and sometimes with a decision to let them run their own course, follow their path, walk their walk without any interference or intervention from you. Now, all parents know about this choice and agonize over it daily. What you have the opportunity to do for the less fortunate is to remind them, that is, cause them to be of a new mind about themselves. And you too have to be of a new mind about them. For if you see them as unfortunate, they will. Jesus' great gift was that he saw everyone as who they truly are. He refused to accept appearances. He refused to believe that others believed of themselves. He refused to believe what others believed of themselves. He always had a higher thought, and he always invited others to it. Yet, he also honored where others choose to be. He did not require them to accept his higher idea, merely held it as an invitation. He dealt, too, with compassion. And if others choose to see themselves as being needing assistance, he did not reject them for their faulty assessment, but allowed them to love their reality and lovingly assisted them in playing out their choice. But Jesus knew that for some, the fastest way to who they are was the path through who they are not. He did not call this an imperfect path and thus condemn it. Rather, he saw this too as perfect and thus supported everyone in being just who they wanted to be. Anyone, therefore, who asked Jesus for help received it. He denied no one, but was always careful to see that the help he gave supported a person's full and highest desire. If others genuinely sought enlightenment, honestly expressed readiness to move to the next level, Jesus gave them the strength, the courage, the wisdom to do so. He held himself out, and rightly so, as an example and encouraged people. If they could do nothing else to have faith in him, he would not, he said, lead them astray. Many put their faith in him, and to this day he helps those who call upon his name. For his soul is committed to waking up those who seek to be fully awake and fully alive in God. Yet Christ had mercy on those who did not. He therefore rejected righteousness, as does his Father in heaven, made no judgments ever. Jesus' idea of perfect love was to grant all persons exactly the help they requested, after telling them the kind of help they could get. He never refused to help anyone, and at least of all, would he do so out of a thought that you made your bed, now lie in it. Jesus knew that if he gave people the help they asked for, rather than merely the help he wanted to give, that he was empowering them at the level at which they were ready to receive empowerment. This is the way of all great masters, those who have walked on this earth in the past, and those who are walking it now. So you say, wait, I'm confused. When is it empowering to offer help? When does it work against rather than for another's group? When your help is offered in such a way creates continued dependence rather than rapid independence, when you allow others in the name of compassion to begin to rely on you rather than rely on themselves. This is not compassion, but is compulsion. You have a power of compulsion because that sort of helping is really power tripping. Now, this distinction can be very subtle here, and sometimes you don't even know you are power tripping. You really believe you are simply doing your best to help another. Yet, be careful that you are not simply seeking to create your own self-worth. For to the extent that you allow other persons to make you responsible for them, to that extent you have allowed them to make you powerful. And that, of course, makes you feel worthy. Yet, this kind of help is an aphrodisiac which seduces the weak. The goal is to help the weak grow strong, become weaker, This is the problem with many government assistance programs, for they often do the latter rather than the former. Government programs can be self-perpetrating. Their objective can be every bit as much to justify their existence as to help those that are meant to be assist. If there was a limit to all government assistance, people would be helped when they genuinely needed help but could not become addicted to that help, substituting it for their own self-reliance. Government understands that help is power. That is why government offers as much help to as many people as they can get away with. For the more people government help, the more people help the government. Whom the government supports the government. Should there be no redistribution of wealth? The Communist Manifesto is satanic. Of course there is no Satan, but I understand what you're meaning. The idea behind the statement, from each according to his ability, to each according to his needs, is not evil. It is beautiful. It is simply another way of saying you are your brother's keeper. It is the implementation of this beautiful idea that can become ugly. Sharing must be a way of life, not an attic imposed of government. Sharing should be voluntary, not forced. I say to you, but here we go again. At its best, government is the people, and its programs are simply mechanisms by which the people share with many others as a way of life. And I would argue that people collectively, through their political systems, have chosen to do so because people have observed, and history has shown, that the haves do not share with the have-nots. The Russian peasants could have waited until hell froze over for the Russian nobles to share its wealth, which was usually gained and largely through the hard work of peasants. The peasants were given just enough to subsist on as the incentive to keep working the land and make the land barons richer. Talk about a dependency relationship. This was a, I'll have you only if you help me arrange more or inventions. What I'm trying to get across is that we are to help our brothers and our sisters, but there is a limit, and there is a difference between helping and becoming dependent upon. It is important for us to understand that God observes that the world has yet to come up with a system of government which provides a total solution. Although the government of the United States has come the closest so far, the difficulty is that goodness and fairness are moral issues, not political issues. Government is the human attempt to mandate. Is a attempt to mandate. And mandate, and as we all know, mandating is another form of power and control. But I want us to understand who we are. And once we can understand exactly who it is that we are, then we can be of a greater help. But I'll tell you this, it's difficult to hear, but I'll tell you this. There is perfection in everything. Strive to see the perfection. This is the change of consciousness of which I speak about. Need nothing. Desire everything. Choose what shows up. Feel your feelings. Cry your cry. Laugh your laugh. Honor your truth. Yet when all the emotion is done, be still and know that God is God. In other words, in the midst of the greatest tragedies, see the glory of the process. even as you die with a bullet through your chest, even as you are being gang raped. Now, this sounds like such an impossible thing to do. Yet, when you move to God consciousness, you can do it. You don't have to do it, of course. It depends on how you wish to experience the moment. In a moment of great tragedy, the challenge always is to quiet the mind and move deep within the soul. You automatically do this when you have no control over it. Have you ever talked with a person who accidentally ran a car off a bridge or found himself facing a gun or nearly drowned? Often they will tell you that time slowed way down, that they were overcome by a curious calm, that there was no fear at all. Fear not, for God is with you. That is what poetry has to say to the person facing tragedy in your darkest hour. God will be your light. In your blackest moment, God will be your consolation. In your most difficult and trying times, God will be your strength. Therefore, have faith, for God is your shepherd. You shall not want. God has caused you to lie down in green pastures. God will lead you beside still waters. God will restore your soul and lead you in the path of righteousness for his name's sake. And yea, though you walk through the valleys of the shadows of death, you will fear no evil, for God is with you. God's rod and staff will comfort you. God is preparing a table before you in the presence of your enemy. God shall anoint your head with oil. Your cup will runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy will follow you all the days of your life, and you will dwell in God's house and in God's heart forever. See, now, we've been saying these things for a long, long time throughout our different religious experiences and stuff. But what we have to truly understand that there is power in this. And what happened is we've gotten to the point where it's more of a ritual, and we're not understanding, as they say, you're not understanding the words that are coming out of your very own mouth. You're speaking it, but you're not believing it. And part of the creative process is when you speak, you have to believe. Jesus said, faith the size of a mustard seed. You can move mountains. Now, people took that literally to mean move mountains. And I'll tell you this, literally you can move mountains. But you can also move all these little obstacles that are hindering you from being who you really are. So be mindful of what it is, not only that you say, but be mindful of what it is that you do, that you think. It's important that you do this. This is the building of changing what it is that we once thought of ourselves to who we are now. And we have to understand we are greater than what it is that we've been led to believe. We are part of the body of God. If you derive your life's greatest happiness from experience obtained only in the outside world, the physical world outside of yourself, you will never want to give up any ounce of all that you piled up as a person, as a nation, to make you happy. And as long as those who have not seen their unhappiness tied to the lack of material things, they too will get caught up in the trap. They will constantly want what they have got and will constantly refuse to share it. This is why I said earlier that there is a way to truly eliminate wars and all experience of unrest and lack of peace. But this is a spiritual solution. Ultimately, every geopolitical problem, just as every personal problem, breaks down to a spiritual problem. All of life is spiritual. and therefore all of life's problems are spiritually based and spiritually solved, created on the planet because everybody has something that somebody else wants. This is what causes someone to do something that somebody else does not want them to do. All conflicts arise from misplaced desires. The only peace in all the world that is sustained is an internal peace. Let each person find peace within. When you find peace within, you also find that you can do without. This means simply that you no longer need the things of your outside world. Not needing is a great freedom. It frees you, first from fear that there is something you won't have, fear that there is something you have that you will lose, and fear that without a certain thing, you won't be happy. Secondly, not needing frees you from anger. Anger is fear announced. When you have nothing to fear, you have nothing over which to be angry. Yet, you are not angry when you don't get what you want because your wanting it was simply a preference, not a necessity. You, therefore, have no fear associated with the possibilities of not getting it, hence, no anger. You are not angry when you see others doing what you don't want them to do because you don't need them to do or not do any particular thing, hence, no anger. You are not angry when someone is unkind because you have no need for them to be kind. You have no anger when someone is unloving because you have no need for them to love you. You have no anger when someone is cruel or hurtful or seeks to damage you, for you have no need for them to behave any other way. And you are clear that you cannot be damaged. You do not even have anger should someone seek to take your life, because you do not fear death. When fear is taken from you, all else can be taken from you, and you will not be angry. You know inwardly, intuitively, that everything you've created can be created again. Or, more importantly, it doesn't matter. When you find inner peace, neither the presence nor the absence of any person, place or thing, condition, circumstances, or situations can be the creator of your state of mind or the cause of your experience of being. Now, this does not mean that you reject all things of the body. Far from it. You experience being fully in your body and delight of that as you never have before. Involvement with things of the body will be voluntarily, not mandatory. You will experience bodily sensations because you choose to, not because you are required to in order to feel happy or to justify sadness. This one simple change, seeking and finding peace within, could where it undertaken by everyone would end all wars, eliminate conflicts, prevent injustices, and bring the world to everlasting peace. There is no other formula necessary or possible. World peace is a personal thing. What is needed is not a change of circumstances, but a change of consciousness. Peace within. Peace within. Things I used to do, I don't do no more. It's not that I can't do them. It's not that if I do them, God's going to be mad with me, because God is not going to get mad with you. It's just that I believe I'm correct when it was Paul who said, when I was a child, I did childish things, but as I grew older, I put away those things. So it's important for us to understand that just because I used to do something and I don't do it anymore does not mean that it was bad. It's just that you don't desire to do those anymore. It's just that simple. We've got to stop labeling everything as good or bad. And what we have to see them as instead of good or bad is, this doesn't serve me. So because this doesn't serve me, okay, I see it, but I'm letting it go. Why am I letting it go? Because it doesn't serve me. And if it doesn't serve me, I've got to move on to something that is going to serve me. And when I say me, I am referring to my soul. It's important for us to work to get to that level of God consciousness so that a lot of the things that seem to tick us off, a lot of the things that seem to just totally upset our day, if we go within and get that inner peace, then we can begin to understand, as my mother liked to say, that understanding that overcomes all things. When we get to that point where when we have that peace within, where you're able to not allow the fact that somebody stepped on your toe to get you all messed up inside. That's what's important. And this is where I'm hoping that something that is being said daily throughout these podcasts, someone will take heed and go within so that they can understand just how great they are. I'm quoting my mother a lot tonight, but my mother loves to always talk about a pity party. And this is just what we're doing. We're having our own little pity party, and there is no reason for it. When you understand and know who you are, then that peace that surpasses all understanding, then that peace comes upon you. Then they say, things I used to do, I don't do no more. Things that places I used to go, I don't go anymore. And it doesn't bother me. It's not that, quote unquote, I've gotten to part to the point where, as they like to say, I've become a holy roller. No, it's just that I am in a different state of mind. I'm in a state of mind where it's all right with my soul. And in order for us to understand that, we have to understand that there is more to us than just this body. We have to understand that we are three-part being, mind, body, and soul. And all we pay attention to is the body. When we pay attention to the body and the soul, to the mind and the body. So from the age of 5 to 20, 22, we go to school and we work on the mind. After we come out of school, we stop working on the mind because then we think we know everything. We don't read anymore. We don't grow and remember things. But we're always worried about the body. Even though that great leader, that great son of God, that left word that everybody seems to want to follow, said, don't worry about the body. It's the soul. It's the soul. But because we don't truly understand and get, I'm going back to my mother. Today is, quote, my mother day, all right? But my mother likes to say, you don't get the fully understanding of what it is that is truly being said. I just want us to understand this. We are having a half an hour show today. I just wanted to lay that on you today, just to give you something to understand and begin to look back and see how you can change things, how you can make your life just what it is that you want it to be. You know, we're right steady looking. We won't take a step unless I'm waiting for God to order my steps. Even though God said in the Word, it says, you take a step, and you take one step. Faith without work is dead. So we're right steady just looking for God to do everything, and God has given us the ability to do all that we need to do. All we have to do is believe and start doing. So as we begin to wind down our show, I just wanted to lay that on your hearts today, and I just pray that something was said that will touch the inner spirit, that will give you direction to move forward so that you can be the best you that you can be. Not what other people want you to be, but what you want to be. It is your life that you are to live.
Amen.
Thank you. And as we listen to my dear mother close us out, I just thank everyone for tuning in. And I pray that you find it not robbery to join us again on Sunday. Sunday night, 9 p.m., we will once again go into discussion so that we can work to be the best that we can be. I love you all. Have a great evening, a fantastic rest of the day, tomorrow, weekend, and every day, because you
Amen.
Have the ability to make each day your best day. I love you all. Good night, everyone.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.